I will say, as someone who has auditioned hundreds and hundreds, and if not over 1,000 voiceover artists, and listened to very talented people doing the same take over and over again, the recording quality, the sound quality absolutely matters. And it's an immediate, there's so many people for me where it's an immediate no, because the moment I hear the sound quality and it's not totally up to a pro level, I assume tons of things about that.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Will Seabrook. My next guest is a former Warner Brothers recording artist, as well as the founder of two award-winning creative agencies. He's produced over 8,000 videos and commercials for some of the world's biggest and most successful companies. His name is Will Seabrook, and we'll be talking about how sound design affects his creative process, what people should keep in mind about sound when it comes to their own projects, and what role he sees AI playing in the short and long term when it comes to sound of all sorts. If you work in sound and you're struggling to find your place in the modern marketplace, you definitely want to listen to this. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Will Seabrook. Welcome, Will. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. And I start these discussions by asking a question of my guest about if you have a story or some kind of early memory of how sound moved you.
Well, I come from a music background, so I had recording contracts and things like that. I was on TV and radio and toured around. And so music obviously is very important to me and moves me. And I distinctly remember being maybe 4 or 5 years old, and I was lying on the living room shag carpet in our little house. And
the shag carpets.
Yeah, and I had two giant speakers, one on each side of my head, so sort of makeshift headphones. And it was The Boxer, the song The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel. I'm dating myself. This is my parents' music, right, when I was a kid. And just the string orchestra comes in, and there's just these huge epic. There's a lot of reverb on the drum hits and things, and it just was the most epic sound. And I remember I came home from preschool, and I was talking to my mother, and I kept saying, Funkel, Funkel. She's like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, you want a pencil? Like, what do you mean? And she finally figured out that I wanted to listen to Simon and Garfunkel. I just didn't know how to say it, you know?
Oh, okay. And, that's kind of adorable.
Yeah. So it started early, for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to date myself here, too. I remember listening to records of Henry Mancini.
Nice.
Now, my parents had that, so that was, again, my parents' music. But, you know, I mean, the Pink Panther, good God, that's like...
Epic. So good.
Epic. Yeah. Exactly. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So what's your background in music? Because obviously that was your full-time gig for a while, right? So how did you get into that? And then what led you out of that?
Well, I sang as a little kid. I think it took me years and years to understand that not everybody, I just thought everybody could sing. I grew up going to church and heard, you know, the whole congregation sing, some people a little better than others, obviously, but it never occurred to me that I had any sort of extraordinary talent. So I sang as a kid and things, and did a little bit of performing here and there, like in church and stuff like that. And then I was in high school and I was in the locker room after just playing sports and just sort of singing to myself. And one of the guys there was in charge of an a cappella group, an all guys a cappella group, which was cool, relatively on campus. It was a boarding school that we went to. So we all lived together. So anything you could do to impress the girls is what the guys were all about.
Of course.
And so we got to be all suave in our coats and ties and singing songs. And he said, you should try out for my group because you have a good voice. And so I did, and I made it. And then I sang a solo at this sort of fall concert for parents and things, and just got a huge response. And I was like, I like this. This is fun. This is cool. Ooh,
so that was the beginnings of stage presence.
Yeah. And just kind of took off from there. And then I did a project my last year in school. It was actually like a class, essentially an independent study project. And so I made an album with the band I had in high school, which was just absolutely terrible. So bad, just next level bad. But it taught me how it worked and went into the studio and recorded and mixed and mastered and all that. And a producer in LA somehow got a hold of it and said and flew me out there. And I started doing demos in his studio. And he was the first person in the industry who said, you know, you could do this for a living if you wanted. And I was maybe 19 and I just needed to hear it from one person. It never even occurred to me. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was like, it just wasn't even on my radar. And I had one person say, you could make money. You could make a living doing this. I was like, good, I'm in, let's go. And that led to an independent label deal, which led to a deal with Warner Brothers. And then I ended up having like 150 songs in TV shows and movies and things like that. And open for some big bands and I was on the radio, but I never had like a top 10 hit. I kind of took it as far as I could go. And then sort of interestingly, I lost my voice pretty much overnight. I just hit a wall with it. And
what happened?
Well, it's sort of in hindsight, it's a mix of physical, just pushing it, bad technique, pushing it too far, super stressful, doing everything wrong in terms of technique and lifestyle. And then also I was quite unhappy at the time. Looking back on it, it was, the music business wasn't at all what I thought it was. And I, in fairness to everybody else involved, I just wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready to take advantage of the opportunities that were given to me. The biggest, my son is now making music, his journey has been completely different. His music is completely different. It's everything about it. And I love that because he's been able to avoid some of my mistakes, which I was proud of. And he's just very much his own person too. And he's learned a lot. But the biggest mistake I made that I look back on, it was like a fork in the road. The label was going to put me together with some hit songwriters, like well-known people who had written with huge artists. And I said, no, I got this. I'm fine.
Oh boy.
Cause I had written like 50 songs, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, there was already a 5-to-1 ratio was what was going to make it on the album.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, I look back on that and just like, oh my God, that was epically stupid mistake, because you just learn. It's an opportunity to learn from the best people in the business. I should have just jumped at that and been so grateful for the opportunity. But in the typical hubris that comes with youth, I was like, hold my beer, I got this. I made a career of making pretty good music, essentially. And I still record. I did an EP in Nashville a few years ago, and I still write. And I think like any artist that gets in your, it's in your blood. You can't not do it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So
you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's there. You just gotta keep doing it. And it feeds the soul,
totally.
I guess. Yeah.
Totally. And my son was born and I took some time off to be with him and my wife, and one thing led to another. Essentially, it's the type of career where you have to absolutely hustle forever to keep it going. Like even the biggest stars in the world, you look at the arc of their career and it might look like that, but behind the scenes, it's like they're just hustling. And they're, 6 months away from disaster at any given time, right? So.
Oh, yeah. And I totally get it. I have one album out. One.
Nice.
It was done in 2015, and I have no desire to do another one.
Right. Yeah, it's also good if, get it out of your system and enjoy the experience. And like, all right, that was fun.
It was fun. It was a collaborative effort between myself and a friend in the UK, and he's a lifetime musician in Leicester, and
nice.
Fantastically talented. And the only thing I do is sing. Mm. I can't play any other instrument. So he did everything else. Like, it was just amazing how he pulled it all off. And we made this album, and I'm happy. That's it. That's all cool. I need.
Yeah, that's great. Good to have friends like that. Talented.
It
friends.
Is. I'm sure you have quite a few of them yourself.
I do. I've been, that was one of the biggest blessings of my life, was just being, having so many people around me from the beginning all the way through my career up to now. Just, there are so many talented artists. And I will say, I think the rise of social media, the way things have changed in the last 10, 15 years, you just realize what an incredible amount of talent there is in the world, and so many people who they don't necessarily have the expertise to pursue it professionally or what have you, but now you can just sit down with your phone and a guitar and make a beautiful noise and inspire people. And I do think that part's neat.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what can be accomplished.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
So from music to what? I mean, because that stops, what do you do? Well,
there were a couple of steps in there where I'd never had a quote-unquote straight job. You know, I'd run bands and basically been an entrepreneur without even really acknowledging that's what I was doing, but I was a small business owner. I mean, Justin Bieber is technically a small business. It's like,
of course.
I think it's anything under 25 million a year or something. It's technically a small business.
Yeah. I think a lot of us fall in that.
Exactly. Well, it's they're the backbone of every major economy. That's how it works. So I worked for a few people. I did a few different things. And then I essentially started a creative agency with a partner. And then we fell into creating video, mainly online, doing some TV commercial work as well. And then I went out on my own about a little over 6 years ago. And now I do all kinds of things. And it's funny, I focused on Fortune 500 clients for years and years, almost all my career. And then in the last few months, I started focusing again on small businesses. And so I've kind of pivoted and sort of brought things full circle in a way. And it's been really fun and really interesting to come back to that, because very, very different working with like a marketing director at a multi-billion dollar conglomerate versus, you know, a local dentist. This is his baby, his or her baby, and it's everything to them. It's much more emotional journey, but I get to be more helpful with more things. I'm not just creating content. I'm helping them put it out into the world, improve their business, et cetera. And I find that fun and engaging.
Yeah. So sound, how does that tie into both of those things? I guess it must have been different working for the Fortune 500 companies than it is for the smaller companies, but sound is still in there. So
it's everything. It's really interesting. I feel like with visuals, you infer so many things so quickly and you make so many snap judgments about the quality of a brand or a presentation or the quality translates over into people's perception of the brand itself or the product or the service. And people make a million snap judgments on things like that without even realizing. They do the same thing with sound, but I find the average person's awareness of sound is not nearly as sort of refined, or they're not aware of it themselves. And so you can have something that looks great, that communicates, that the value proposition is well articulated. And if the sound isn't up to par, people don't like it and they won't respond to it. And they have this sort of visceral response. And that comes down to sound design and music, the voiceover, the quality of the voiceover, the believability of it, and how relevant it is to the audience and their needs. And you can make sort of 1,000 little decisions related to sound that either enhance or inhibit the communication and therefore the effectiveness of whatever it is you're trying to communicate. So I think coming from, and I'll say too, coming from a music background, even with copywriting, with the scripts and the pacing, I try to bring almost a level of musicality to everything I'm producing. And that comes to visuals, it comes to the rhythm of things and the timing of things and just those thousand tiny little decisions. Is the music balanced with the voiceover? Is it fighting it ever? Is it enhancing it at certain key points? Things like that. And it's, you can teach those things to a degree, but I find a lot of producers and editors and content creators who are very successful just intuitively have some emotional understanding of it. It just makes sense to them. And I think that's a skill set that not tons of people have. And I think it's very valuable if you do have it.
Yeah, especially for people who focus on video, because a lot of times the visuals become everything. Mm. And the amalgamation of all of the things that make that production successful are kind of left by the wayside. Again, that's why I have this podcast in the first place.
Yeah.
Because as a voice actor, I was being called on last and it wasn't really being thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those things that I'm really passionate about telling people about, because I mean, yes, the voiceover makes a lot of difference, but so does the music, so does the sound design, so does everything you're putting in there that's sound related, because it relates to what's on the video.
100%.
And especially knowing, as a voice actor, knowing that you are not the be all and end all.
There are
lots of instances where, like in a radio commercial, where the voiceover is it. That's all you have. But when you're talking about enhancing the visuals, you're a voice under. You're not a voice over. And a lot of like a lot of producers sometimes don't understand that. A lot of voiceovers people don't necessarily understand that sometimes. It's a creative process with everybody involved, as you know. I know you know.
And again, like mixing a song, you know, it's like the joke that Saturday Night Live's got about more cowbell, right? That's such a great example of, you know, it's like, it's a little much there, guys, right? And it can be, I find the pros, again, have this sort of intuitive understanding, or they're taught. I mean, obviously, I don't want to say you're just born with it. It's just they've been around it enough. They've had mentors. They just understand what it means to be a professional. You are all contributing to a cohesive whole that needs to really communicate. And if you take that viewpoint on it, that you're there to help and you're there to enhance,
you're part of the team.
Totally. Then it goes really, really well. And if you just can't take any of it personally. And that's been an interesting thing about being a producer versus being the talent, where I think a lot of talent, you know, you'll audition for something, whether you're an actor or a voiceover artist or what have you, and you'll just think, God, I'm just perfect for this. And then you don't get it, and you see it or you hear it later, and you're like, I'm better than that guy or that girl. And it's not always the most talented person or the best looking person or the most qualified in some other respect. It's just what works. It's what they're looking for. It's what communicates in that instance. And I think when you're the producer, you understand that in a way that you don't when you're just the talent who's auditioning for it.
Oh, so totally. You see the bigger picture. You're totally a little higher up.
It's very important as a creative person, if you're putting yourself out there again and again, just getting rejected, always, if you can get feedback, obviously that's very helpful, but don't automatically assume that you did something wrong or you've made a mistake or you're not talented or you're not doing everything right. You could do everything right and still not be the person who gets selected, right?
Oh yeah, totally. And as voice actors, we understand that we are usually never going to hear any feedback.
Right.
First of all, I'm sure you get this as well.
Yeah.
And often it's a completely subjective decision. So
absolutely,
if they hear your voice and you sound like the sister-in-law they hate, well, you're not going to get the job. It's really that simple.
100%. I will say, as someone who has auditioned hundreds and hundreds and if not over 1,000 voiceover artists and listened to very talented people doing the same take over and over again, the recording quality, the sound quality absolutely matters. And it's an immediate, there are so many people for me where it's an immediate no, because the moment I hear the sound quality and it's not totally up to a pro level, I assume tons of things about that. This person isn't serious or isn't particularly experienced or whatever. It's just, it's going to be a lot of work for me. And it's going to be, if the client picks this person and then there's some weirdness about the quality of it, or they don't get back to me in a timely fashion, you just can't take those risks at all. It could create the snowball of other unintended consequences that for me as the agency, as the producer of the overall content, I just don't want to deal with that. Right. And so I'll disqualify people. Sometimes they'll sound talented. They do a good job delivering it, but the quality of their recording setup for whatever reason just isn't up to par. So that's something just as a bit of feedback that people probably never get. It's like, you know, it's like, well, it sounds good to me, but does it sound as good as the 20 other voices that you're, that the person's listening to on the audition? That's really the test of, is your gear up to that level and your technique, right? You're not popping, you're not, but it's very full and rich and just has that high quality to it. You know, that matters.
Yeah. It's a good point to make. And I think a lot of voice actors should definitely take that into account. Especially now after COVID, because a lot of us were stuck in our houses and had to come up with a home studio pretty quickly. Mm. I mean, personally, I've had one since 2011.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people who were in a big city and they were used to just going into a recording studio on a regular basis, that just completely changed their world. You know?
And there is a science to it, obviously. One of the things I love about video and audio production, it's really sort of 50-50 art and science. Mm-hmm. And in order to bring, there's your career and your progression as an artist, and then there's your career and progression as a technician, right? And I think it's equally important to always be curious and changing and understanding new techniques and things. I mean, tomorrow morning I'm doing a video for a local dentist literally right around the corner from my house, which has never happened in my life. It's the greatest gig ever. I could literally walk there. I'm not going to do that. I have a lot of
Do you get
equipment.
A discount?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or they should get a discount, right? Yeah. No travel cost. But I'm doing virtually all social media content. And as I've been pivoting away from the corporate work, we're still doing that for a few key clients, but I'm doing this now for small businesses. And I've changed my whole rig and my whole setup completely. So I used to have, you know, a $3,000 boom microphone on a stand and the whole thing. And now I have the DJI, you know, lav mics that everybody sees, the little units. And I have ways to sort of hide them, and I know basic techniques, so it still sounds good. But just going in and setting up takes me literally 20% of the time that it used to. And just understanding what's important to the final communication, what it's like a when in Rome, do as the Romans do type thing with social content. My goal is to be at least 5% better than anything else out there, but you don't have to, you know, drive the nail with a sledgehammer. I don't need to bring in $50,000 worth of gear for a social video about, like, hey, did you know this about your teeth? You know, it's like, let's have fun and keep it light and keep it easy for the client. So again, everything is changing so rapidly these days, and being able to stay on top of that and being curious enough to do that is really important.
Hello, I'm international pianist and founder of Ridley Academy, Stephen Ridley, and you are listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a place where we celebrate the power of music. If you want to experience that power and harness it in your own life, keep listening.
So my next question, as far as the social media is concerned, then, is do you find that less quality in the video actually makes it more viral?
So we do, when I started this new program that we're doing, it's just a few months old, and I did three variations of our first ad. So we're doing ads on Instagram and Facebook. And it's just me, for better or for worse, just me talking to camera. And I did a version here in my studio, which when I have our, you know, the nice camera, the lighting looks super, it pops really well, looks very polished and pro. I did two versions in the studio, and on a friend's recommendation, I did a version on my couch just to see. The version on my couch outperformed the other two versions 2-1. And I did an updated version with new, and it was based on dozens of conversations with doctors, the people that we're targeting. I understand their needs and their concerns better. I rewrote the script. I'm like, oh, this is going to kill it. I'm going to crush it now. And so I did it in my studio again. I like my studio, and I don't have to move all my gear. I'm lazy. It's all set up and ready to go. So I did it. The old ad still doubled it, just outperformed, just crushing it.
Okay.
So social media is fascinating that way. And you'll see things with people doing the weirdest stuff. Like what? And I feel like there's just this giant social experiment that we're all a part of that never ends. And trends evolve. They come and go very quickly. But you'll see a lot of influencers and things. It's sort of like whatever's just going to get your attention. Like, hey, pay attention over here. Stop scrolling. Stop. You know? And it's like, all right, whatever gets you to do that. Right. And pretty soon it's just, I mean, you know, you could extrapolate out where the heck this is all going in 5 years, but I don't think anybody has that crystal ball. It's evolving at the speed of light right now.
It totally is. Yeah.
But interestingly, I will say that I think audio quality is always going to matter, and it's never going to be as effective
if someone's in the background like this, talking like this, and you can sort of hear them, but not really.
You're just going to be like, this is annoying. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're saying. I don't like
that. Or
they're
peaking or popping all
over the
place.
That's the worst thing, right? Oh, yeah.
Just when that, it hurts your ears.
Even digitally, it's not the horrible noise it used to be 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But even digital peaking.
Fix it in post.
Totally.
A lot.
But it still sounds just awful. Yeah. Although now you've got with 32-bit float things, you know, they're coming up with solutions. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. It's a fascinating time for the technology and the consumer products that are out there now. They're just amazing. Speaking of those new microphones I have, though, they have that type of recording, so I don't have to worry about them peaking, right? Which is amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
But the audio quality, I think, is always, it's just forever, it's going to matter. And you can have the most low quality visuals and things, like homemade has a certain look and feel to it. But also, if you ask any actual influencer behind the scenes, homemade is just as thought through and produced. Like I was on a reality TV show 20 some years ago, and nothing about it is real, right? You see, like we were living all together in this mansion and the cameras are pointing this way. And if you look down on the floor, there are lights and cables and a phalanx of lights in every direction as far as you can see. And you can barely step on the floor for all the cables running everywhere. There's nothing real about it, right? And so it's very important for people to understand that simple or homemade style does not mean that it's not produced, the storytelling elements aren't there. It's just a different medium in a way than trying to make a TV show or a movie. But it's there's a lot of thought that goes into it when it's well produced.
Definitely, yeah. And I did a voiceover for a show called Buying and Selling back in like 2013 or something.
Yeah, I remember
like
that show.
Yeah, just for like a year and a half.
Ooh.
And yeah, that also was, I mean, that's reality show, but not really. Yeah. Oh my goodness, there was a show before that called In-Law Wedding Wars.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, can you imagine, right? I did the voiceover for that. Oh my God.
Yeah, that must have been quite something. Did you see all the footage that you're doing it for, or do you just get the scripts for it?
I did see the footage, because this was a while back. Right, so I saw all the footage. And then I got the stories from some of the producers of what actually happened.
Yeah, right.
While
like,
I was...
Like the stuff you can show on TV, right? Like, good Lord.
Yeah. Like this mother-in-law got really drunk and we had to like completely keep the cameras off of her.
Right.
Like just things like that. It was just hilariously funny to hear these stories afterwards.
No
so yeah, I can relate.
Totally.
Not as directly as you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite a different world.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.